Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Sloane Crosley is the author of 3 essay collections and 2 novels. She has an uncanny gift for writing funny dialogue. Very funny dialogue. But you don't have to take my word for it. Not that you would. Steve Martin said this about Sloane's essay collection, Look Alive Out There. Quote, Sloane Crosley does the impossible. She stays consistently funny and delivers a book that is alive and jumping. Unquote. Now Sloane is back with another novel. It's called Cult Classic, and it focuses on a 37-year-old woman named Lola, who keeps bumping into her ex-boyfriends in New York City. Not an uncommon feat, but it's a bit suspicious that it keeps happening in a 5-block radius. And as it turns out, Lola's former boss, Clive Glenn, has something to do with these supposedly random encounters. Sloane joined us for a consistently fun interview, just like Steve Martin said, about Cult Classic and why she decided to write it.
I wrote it out of avoidance, which is not necessarily a great motivation to do anything creative, but it is a great way to get things done in general, where you don't want to do something else, so you do this other thing. But I had truly avoided writing about romance, dating in New York. I just felt like these subjects are very cliche. At their best, they're just sort of well-trodden. And I finally thought, you know, this is insane. I'm avoiding writing about something I really care about that takes up most of my brain, the brains of everyone I've ever met, because I'm worried about response or I'm worried about being pigeonholed as a certain kind of writer. And so I just sort of waited like a tiny, tiny little baby cobra snake until I could sink my teeth into a hopefully creative way to tell a romantic New York story.
And that's exactly what you've done. And,
thank
and
you.
An original. Thank you for doing that. And also a very original romantic
I
New York
so.
Story.
I hope so. I hope so. It has some strange elements that are a little bit more than just people sitting in a bar feeling bad for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so good. Your protagonist is named Lola. And over the course of a few days, she keeps running into some of her ex-boyfriends. What effect do these encounters have on her?
You know, I think that there's the intended or desired effect, and then what actually happens. So I think what's supposed to happen is that she keeps on running into these people as long as she steps within a 5-block radius of this sort of cult-like institution, which we can get into. But she keeps on doing this, and it's supposed to bring her closure. It's supposed to set her up so that she can put the past to bed and marry her fiancé, who she loves. But she has a lot of doubts about marriage as an institution. There's a lot of ethical and philosophical questions in the book. And instead, it's just wildly confusing. So if you imagine picking up your phone right now and scrolling through and looking at text messages, be they with friends or former lovers or even current people you once fought with from, you know, I don't know, 2013, you would be sort of sucked back into that moment, and to those emotions or those memories would become emotions again. And so that's sort of what happens to her IRL, as it were.
Yeah.
So she gets very confused.
Yes, and rightfully so, yeah. And her fiancé, who you mentioned, his name is Boots, and he's a glassblower. And
yes,
it's worth pointing out that he's very tall, 6'3". What impact does Lola randomly meeting all of these exes have on her relationship with Boots?
Well, they're all shorter. No, I don't know. that's a really weak premise for a novel. It's just it's a woman and a bunch of short men. No. I think what happens is you know, anyone you're with, I think part of growing up is realizing that you can have magic in a relationship and you can also figure out what is good enough for you. And that kind of language gets a bad rap. It sounds like settling. It sounds sad. It sounds like a betrayal of your sort of inner child. But all these people have different qualities than he has. And so she is sort of, again, sort of sucked back in is the best way I can put it. It feels like a whirlpool into wondering if, you know, the qualities that XYZ person has might have been better and would be better for her current self. You know, it's a bad state to be in, to be doubting your relationship and then have all these people that you're looking at through rose-colored glasses come trotting through your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Lola used to work as a writer for a magazine called Modern Psychology, which was run by a man named Clive Glenn. Can you tell us a bit about Clive?
Clive, okay. So you know how writers will often say, oh, I miss this character, this one speaks to me. And I've never really plugged into that because I think it sounds vaguely pretentious, but I miss Clive. I really do. So Clive is this larger-than-life figure, a cult of personality, if you will, who, when he was running this magazine before it folded, became this sort of cult pop psych guru kind of person, where his face, you know, we don't really have one of these, but you can imagine what one would look like, where his face sort of appeared on the side of tote bags, and he had his own podcast, and he created a drinking game based off of the DSM manual. he has basically started this experiment, this kind of high class, upscale mind control cult. And they have this relationship that is, you know, what I like about the book is that she's 37. So it's, you're not wondering if they're going to get together, but it's an old enough relationship where they've had these different roles for each other. So he's been her mentor. They have this brother-sistery relationship. There was sexual tension back in the day, and now there's really no such thing. And now he's just sort of this cross that she has to bear, but is also someone she really loves. And so it's this complicated relationship that, in a way, is my favorite one of the book.
Yeah, mine too. And you mentioned mind control a couple of minutes ago. What can you tell us about the belief system that Clive is trying to push on his followers?
Well, Clive is a very modern cult leader. And I should say that for those interested in cults in general, in the Nexium documentary and Wild Wild Country, this is perhaps not the book for you, as much as I hate to discourage a sale. but he it's not coercive persuasion. He literally is just sort of harnessing the wellness movement and technology and creating these packages for people with the intent of getting them over their romantic past in various different ways. And so Lola's, not to spoil it too much, but is called The Classic. It's one of the ways that the book title works. And basically it's used through, it's not, you know, it's presented as this grand speculative fiction in the book, but I think that we're quite close to it, which is through social media, through the power of suggestion, through manipulating Google search results, just sort of basic techniques combined with a little bit of old-fashioned group meditation. Clive is convinced, and it actually works, that he can drag any one of her exes anywhere he wants. And, you know, in the book, it costs about $250,000 for this experience. But in real life, I think if you gave me $50, I think I could. I don't think it would be that hard. And your internet and, you know, your Instagram password, I think I could put you and someone you don't necessarily want to see in a restaurant tonight.
At one point, a character says that, quote, everyone is living in separate narratives. Marriage is agreeing to live in someone else's narratives, unquote. What do you personally think of this idea?
Oh, I think it's really cynical. I mean, there's a lot of broad sweeping comments or even maybe sort of exhaustive comments about romance in the novel that are presented by different characters where I think when you're in New York, and probably other cities as well, you get exhausted of dating, and you think that it's just, it doesn't seem about a partnership, and you're constantly watching your own relationships almost through a hot air balloon. So you're putting everyone's putting everyone on trial. You know, are you the kind of person who does this? Oh, you have this kind of life, this kind of apartment, this kind of job. Oh, you didn't get that joke, or you left a wet towel on the bed, which of everything I've said is really the crime, let's face it.
Yes.
That's it. Divorce, grounds for divorce.
Yeah.
So this concept of does your story meld up with mine is a horrible way to date and a horrible way to look at somebody, as opposed to building a story together and being a little bit more malleable. But it's a struggle as you grow up to not be formed by your past experiences so much that you have no room for a new kind of story. So that statement, marriage is agreeing to live in someone else's narrative, is the statement of somebody who is not yet willing to be in a serious relationship.
Very well said. And of course, then if we factor in online dating and the use of internet apps for dating, that complicates the whole thing further, doesn't it, dating?
It absolutely does. I mean, I think that, you know, I personally am just blessed to have limited experience with this. But, you know, I'm not concussed. I live in the world. And so, you know, I was able to, I think, hopefully skewer that. At least, you know, you can tell, I think, the parts of the book where I just really let her rip and have had a lot of fun with it. And there's a passage in the middle where I just go to town on dating apps.
Yes, yes. It's a great passage, too. If you don't mind my asking, how has writing Cult Classic changed the way you think about your own ex-boyfriends?
Oh, no, I don't mind. I mean, I think it's sort of, you know, none of them are my ex-boyfriends, but it would be sort of disingenuous to react to that with what ex-boyfriends? I don't know what you're talking about. I've never dated anyone. I think it's maybe, you know, the book is dedicated for the men, and then there's a bit of a corrective for some of the men.
Yes.
And I do think that even with the ones that I found, you know, who behaved in a way that I found to be unconscionable, the ones that I hurt, the ones that hurt me, there's sort of a beauty in the fact that we all landed here in the same city at the same time. It's kind of unbelievable, and you can't help but love them a little bit, even the terrible ones. And so I think that it made me, through this actually rather cynical streak that she has in the book, you know, she has it for 300 pages. So you're going to start thinking really about other people in your own life as you write it, and also recognize that, you know, she is not me. She's hopefully, I took every sort of bad quality I have and just sort of cranked it up as high as the dial would go. But at the same time, you sort of recognize her complicity in a while, after a while, you know, in certain patterns that she has. So I don't really write as a therapy exercise, either with the narrative nonfiction or with fiction, but inadvertently, it's made me feel a lot warmer towards everyone I've ever known.
Well, that's good. You mentioned bad qualities that you have. What bad qualities do you have? Well, no, honestly, I can't. I kind of doubt. I'm curious because I can't imagine that you would have bad qualities, but I don't know you very well.
Oh, I'm so happy my mother arranged this interview. I think, you know, the qualities are a certain nitpickiness, a certain selfishness. I think, honestly, what happens is you're still, there's a shame, I think, in the culture in general in still getting to know yourself after a certain age and then potentially behaving badly or sending mixed signals, mixed messages after, let's say, 25. So there's this sort of jokey trope of like, oh yeah, your 20s are for figuring it out. And, you know, your 30s are for really like, thank God you know who you are now. And your 40s, you don't have to worry about anything anymore. And that sounds lovely. And it is mostly true, but it doesn't leave any room for someone who's, let's say, 37, like our heroine is, to come out and say, I actually don't know what I'm doing. So I think that perhaps my bad personal qualities come from not feeling like someone or presenting as someone who is fairly articulate and knows, has a lot of opinions and knows exactly what she wants, and then occasionally does not.
When can we look forward to watching Cult Classic, an adaptation of it on a streaming service? That
yes,
should be happening
on a streaming
soon, shouldn't it? Well, seriously.
In all seriousness, I'm working on the screenplay right now. So, I mean, ooh, I'm so excited to talk to you guys, and you're also just holding it up. You know, I could be working on it right now.
Well, what can you? But you're not. Working
yes, sorry.
On a screenplay.
Yeah, that was an elaborate. I am writing the screenplay. Sorry,
oh, you are
that was an
okay.
Elaborate way to say it. Yeah, I am writing the screenplay, which is really exciting for me. I don't know when it would appear. I think it's, you know, there are many steps before that happens, but it's due fairly soon.
Excellent.
It's great because it's a whole different way to tell a story that I still care about. And it's also, frankly, I really enjoy writing dialogue. I think it's apparent in the novel, and hopefully it'll come across on the screen as well.
Absolutely. Now, can you say who you're writing it for? Can you tell us that?
I think I can. Apple?
Oh, Apple.
What are they going to sue me? They don't have a legal team.
Yeah, exactly. No, they don't. Excellent.
Come at me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Apple. So it's exciting because it's like they're, you know, I'm sort of very interested in what they're doing. And they seem to be, thus far, a streaming service that's untouched by too much scandal. So that's good.
Exactly, and no legal team. So that's great.
And we'll zero, there is zero, everyone knows there are zero lawyers that work for Apple.
That's right. We all know that. Sloan Crosley, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Cult Classic.
Thank you for having me. It was really a joy.
Sloan Crosley is an essayist, novelist, and a delightful person to talk to, even more so to listen to. If you don't believe me, ask Craig Ferguson. He had her on his show 5 times. Sloan's latest novel is Cult Classic. You can find out more about Sloan and her work at wpr.org/beta.
I remember seeing her do it in Paris on Arthur Rimbaud's birthday. I really feel like the entire audience levitated off the floor a few inches.
Coming up, music journalist Karen Rose on punk's poet laureate, the one and only Patti Smith. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.